DZUP Special Features.
The Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, full professor of the Department of Behavioral Sciences, it's Dr. Leonardo Junestacio Jr., a good friend of mine.
Thank you, Professor Chadwick. Magandang umaga po sa inyo lahat. Good morning. I just want to say a few things. First, I wish to congratulate and thank Professor Hadi Libertin at Chancellor Labor for spearheading and organizing this very relevant conference entitled The Lost Family Tree, Built Cultural Heritage in its Country. When Professor Labor approached me a couple of months ago to propose his project, I immediately endorsed it even before she was about to finish talking. It was quite informal. We just bumped into each other at the historic stairs at the result hall, and I just told her to submit her proposal and so that we can formalize it. Did I know that it was immediately submitted. So this is a classic and fantastic project because it was organized and being implemented in so short a time with a meager budget, very cost efficient and cost effective indeed. Again, great work, Professor Labor. In the same vein, I wish to thank the Chair of the Department of Arts and Communication, Professor Alisa Deva, for the support and the faculty members, especially the Bachelor of Arts in Philippine Arts program. Yes, we have such a program, and a very special one that our college offers. Thank you, Professor Grace Odal Debra, Professor Celia Godilla, and the rest of the other Field Arts faculty members for organizing and supporting this project. Secondly, I wish to thank the guests and participants, including the students, for taking time to attend this conference. With activities and themes of the conference, such as on heritage and conflict, on local heritage, and on just mentioned Khalil Powera, prepared for you the 3-day conference, you will certainly not regret it. I encourage you to engage in all the activities, especially the papers that will be presented. Thirdly, on behalf of the convener of the conference and the College of Arts and Sciences family, I wish to thank in advance our lecturers and presenters in this conference. I saw in the list of the presenters very familiar figures, friends and colleagues. It is great to know that one of my neighbors in Harina Rosas, the gentlest and most passionate gardener, Dr. Matthew Santa Maria, is one of the speakers in this conference, and I didn't realize that he is an expert in cultural heritage. So welcome to our college, Professor Santa Maria. And I also noticed that our very own centennial dean of the college, the TDH, Manibang Institute of TDH, tall, dark, and handsome, Dr. Ray Imperial, he is also a speaker. I didn't know that Dr. Ray is an expert in cultural heritage as well, the lost and difficult to retrieve national treasure, the Balangiga bells. Kala ko kasi ang expertise niya ay sex and culture. And other prominent scholars and experts in the field whom I haven't personally met, such as Dr. Gerald Ligo, Mr. Siamir Arslan, Architect Karanin Bitina Dulaon, among others. So indeed, it's not after all a cheap conference with all the heavyweights in the field of cultural heritage in attendance. How I wish I did not have other commitments and not as busy as ever. This is one of the conferences that I don't want to miss. Professor Liberty, is this being video documented or live streamed or podcasted in social media? Sana, no? Para kahit di ko narinig at napakinggan in real time, ay mapanood ko man lang sana. So So I wish we can document this thing. Okay, thank you. So with this, I welcome you all to the conference being held at the UP Manila Theater, College of Arts and Sciences, UP Manila. Welcome and mabuhay po kayong lahat.
Pagyamanin ang kaalaman tungkol sa iyong kalusugan at maging handa laban sa anumang karamdaman dahil ang kalusugan mo ay mahalaga. Your Health Matters. Tuwing Martes, alas 4 hanggang alas 5 ng hapon, Health Matters. Dito lang sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka.
Kaya kong unahing gumawa ng homework kahit gustong-gusto ko nang maglaro ng computer games.
Kaya kong manatili sa iisang lane at sumunod sa traffic light kahit nagmamadali ako.
Kaya kong tumawid sa tamang tawiran kahit gaano pa kataas ang aakyatin kong footbridge.
Kaya kong regular na magbayad ng buwis kahit napakaliit ng sahod ko.
Maliliit na mga bagay pero malaki ang may tutulong sa pag-unlad ng bansa. Ikaw, anong kaya mong gawin para sa Pilipinas?
Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka.
Honest ka ba?
Miss, nahulog cellphone mo.
Manong, labis po ang sukli nyo.
Naku ma'am, bawal pong lagay. Ito po ang ticket nyo.
Honesty is still the best policy. Eh ikaw, tapat ka ba?
Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka.
DZUP Special Features.
Allow me to introduce our last speaker, Dr. Alexis, right there. So our last speaker is Professor Matthew Santa Maria from the Asian Center of UP Diliman. So he has a Master of Law and Doctor of Law degrees from Kyoto University. So while we were talking earlier, he said that he stayed there for 9 years and thus is completely fluent in Japanese. He'll be talking today about remembering, forgetting, and moving on. The moving on is something we can all relate to, I suppose. Lessons from 8 cases of conflict, reconstruction of built heritage in Japan. So I'm glad to meet him today, and I hope that you enjoy this 20-minute talk.
Thank you very much, Chad. Good morning. I apologize for the title of my paper. It sounds like a title of a soap opera. But perhaps it's only correct that it sounds like a soap opera because Japan is not at all a stranger to conflict. It has a very long history and it's full of conflict and it has a huge experience in reconstruction of built heritage. I would like to first, I would like to change the slide. Not there. So we are going to look at 8 cultural properties, and I am going to expand the definition of cultural property, not only to take into consideration the usual understanding of what built heritage is. Our usual understanding is that it's a monument or a building. I want you to have a more open mind there because I'm going to include things which are probably not usually included in the idea or the notion of built heritage. And here are our examples. Dean Estacio said that I'm a gardener and he sees me every morning before he comes to UP Manila. And so I begin with the Zen Garden of Kyoto. So we're going to have a catalog, so hopefully that will not bore you. And we will
we will proceed to the Heian Shrine, also of Kyoto, and the Atomic Dome of Hiroshima, Shadow Monument, a very intriguing heritage cultural property based in Hiroshima, the Urakami Cathedral of Nagasaki, the thousand-folded praise of Sadako, the Kinkakuji, or the Golden Pavilion of Kyoto, and of course the Shuri Castle of Okinawa. Now, I'm going to emphasize that the decision whether to rebuild has something to do with the nature and scale of the conflict and the idea of what is necessary to remember. And as such, I frame the idea of rebuilding or building new things with the idea of what do we need to remember. And therefore, we underscore the idea of cultural memory, collective memory, or some people would even call it national memory. Note that this notion is not the same as personal memory, like you will remember what you ate for breakfast this morning, right? But collective memory is memory that is transmitted across generations. You remember when Rizal was executed, not because you saw him executed, but because you were taught about the context and the conditions of his execution. Now, in Japan, this idea of rebuilding would be heavily influenced by Buddhist notions of impermanence, notions of papers of things, mono no aware, the consolation of bereaved souls. All of these things would bleed into their national discourse of memory. Let me now go to the first one, the very famous Zen garden of Ryohanji. The first time I went to this garden was in 1988. And I don't think all of you were born in 1988, right? Who were already alive in 1988? But thank you very much. Okay. Earlier I was talking to Gerard and he was talking about the Metropolitan Theater. And I told him I actually performed in that theater. And I didn't feel old. But in 1986, no? When Lisa Makuha came back from Russia, we did a ballet there. I used to be a ballet dancer. Also used to be a gymnast. Not anymore, you know? Obviously. And I am now giving to you collective memory. Because you did not experience it yourself, but you now know that Dr. Santa Maria performed at the Met. The Met na mukhang gulang-gulalit na, no? Pati ang kaluluwa ko gulang-gulalit na, no? Saan galing yun? Dito rin naman ang mga pera? Pasan ko ang dente, okay? Pasan ko ang dente. The first time I went here, I was with a group of Filipinos, and we had free time, and our coordinator said, where do you want to go? I said, why don't we go to the famous Zen Rock Garden? I knew about the Zen Rock Garden. This is a very classic garden composed of 15 stones. Only 15 stones and pebbles and rock. So this is the quintessential Zen garden facing the Abbot's quarters. Pagdating ko doon, siyempre being a Japanologist, I was ebullient, I was exuberant, I was very happy to see the Zen garden and all of the Filipinos that I brought with me were very sad. He said, ang pangit ko na ng garden ito. Bakit puros ba ito? Hindi nila naintindihan. And I think this is an important thing to understand here. The built heritage is only as good as the narratives that come with it. The built heritage is only as good as the software and the memories that come with it. In other words, the process of meanings that make it important to us. Now, why is this a very important garden? Let's look at the history. In 1450, the temple, the Daimzan Ryohanji Temple was constructed, but before that, it was a villa of a very famous Kyoto personality by the name of Hosokawa Katsumoto. And it's supposed to have an original garden of weeping cherry trees. Lumuluha ng cherry trees. Kung hindi nyo alam yun, balik tayo sa kapilang slide. The slide before that. That is a weeping cherry tree. It's a cherry tree that goes down. So the whole garden is supposed to be composed of weeping cherry trees. Next slide, please. And then in 1467, it was destroyed by the Onin Wars. The whole place was burned down. And in 1499, this was probably where the temple that stands right now was built. A Zen garden was constructed. So the fire got the temple in 1797, happened in Torino, 1797, and the Zen garden survives it. Yeah. Isn't it amazing? The most essential of all gardens, rock, stone, moss, the minimum that you can have for a garden, survives all other fires and all other wars that approach it. So what is the strategy here? Next slide, please. It's a complete replacement, a plant-based garden, which is considered big, constructed heritage in Japan. By the way, Japan has so many important gardens, and this is only one of them. By the way, how many important gardens do we have in the Philippines? Parang wala ang mo. No, we don't look at gardens as field heritage. In Japan, that's part of their psyche. Gardens are built heritage. But complete replacement is a structural replacement, plant-based to stone and pebble-based, and you get the most enduring of all gardens. And the gardens are very beautiful indeed. Let's take a look at the next slide. This is how it looks like in miniature. You can buy this outside the temple if you want a Zen garden of your own. It's supposed to represent mountains, the mountain peaks above clouds. Can you see that? Yes? And that's one representation. The other is it's supposed to be islands in the sea. And the other interpretation, which I still cannot get up to now, tiger cubs crossing a river. Pag nakita ninyo yung tiger cubs crossing the river, please come to me later and talk to me. I will recommend a psychologist. But that's part of the narrative, and that's what makes a field heritage intriguing. Next, please. The next is the Heian Shrine. And this is what you see when you go to the Heian Shrine. And you would not think that this is a totally reconstructed building. It looks quite ancient, but it is not. The latest reconstruction happened in 1970s. Let's go to the next slide, please. This is what happens. It was completed sometime before 1185. This was the time when Kyoto was the capital of Japan. In 1467 to 1477, the Onin War destroys much of Kyoto, along with it, the Emperor's Palace, which is the Heian Shrine area. And in 1895, the capital of Japan was moved from Kyoto to Edo. Remember, we now have a new shogun, Tokugawa Shogunate, and decided to move the capital from Kyoto to Tokyo, which was called Edo at that time. And because of that, the citizens of Kyoto thought and said, we need something to remember our past. We need to boost our morale. And they decided to rebuild part of the old Heian Shrine. And therefore, it was rebuilt 5/8 in scale. Take note, it's not a total recreation. It's not a faithful recreation. It was done in a smaller scale. I would say something like miniaturization. No? Then in 1986, a fire that extensive damages, but in 1979, it was fully reconstructed. Next slide, please. And what is the strategy? Replacement at a smaller scale. Yeah. Complete replacement. So if UP Manila burns down again, God forbid, we can replace it to scale. Instead of this high ceiling, we'll just do it one-third. By the time Siguro all of us will be so malnourished, we will all fit in without much difficulty. Next slide, please. We now go to, this is another picture of Heian Shrine at night. Next, another picture with a ritual happening in front of the shrine altar. Next, please. The next cultural heritage is what we call the Genbaku Dome, the atomic dome of Hiroshima. Now let's talk about this next slide. This was actually built in 1915 as the Hiroshima Prefectural Commercial Exhibition Hall, renamed Hiroshima Prefectural Products Exhibition Hall, and renamed Hiroshima Prefectural Industrial Commercial. They could not seem to desire them. So the Japanese are also, you know, they also cannot decide at times, no? But it was already the Industrial Promotion Hall when it was devastated by the first ever atomic bombing in the world in August 6, 1945, by the atomic bomb called Liverpool. Okay? Little boy, but big devastation. And it devastated it. Many, many people died, devastated that area, that huge area in the middle of Hiroshima. But by 1950 to 1964, they have decided to construct a peace park. In other words, not all buildings were reconstructed. A peace park was decided, but the city council decided to preserve the damaged structure of the dome because it was really very iconic. And that is why we see the ruins in preservation. And in 1996, it was included in the UNESCO World Heritage List. So, pag nasunog yung bahay ninyo, meron pa siyang chance na maging part ng UNESCO World Heritage List. But it's because of the anti-war and the anti-nuclear weapons narrative that this really made it into the World Heritage List. Next, so the strategy is to construct a peace park, to preserve the damaged structure, and to make it a symbol of peace and a continuous reminder of conflict. Next slide. And this is how it used to look. Next slide, please. And that is how it looked like right after the bombing. Looks like a faculty center on Kimberly Mountain. Next slide, please. Then we go to Urakami Church. And this is also demolished in August 9, 1945. Next slide. The Catholic Church used to be the biggest cathedral in the Far East before it was damaged by the second atomic bomb in Nagasaki. This time it was damaged by the fat man. So I think you can remember two things, the little boy and the fat man. And the Nagasaki Park was inaugurated. And, you know, Nagasaki is quite interesting because not many people know, but it actually has a huge community of Christians. And these Christians were persecuted during the Tokugawa period. And the cathedral was actually a symbol of their unity. So it was so important to them. Nagasaki City offered to buy the lot from them, but they refused. The church parishioners said, no, we want to rebuild. So they rebuilt it, but it's a replacement of the original because it was not really, it did not really faithfully copy the original. So next slide, please. So construction of a new structure amidst the ruins and other artifacts. I say amidst the ruins because some parts of the walls, old ruins were preserved, and some statues that were ruined were actually left there. And then we have the construction of a peace park and the artifacts of the museum. I have pilots and I don't know how to do this, but we will try to do it. Next, please. That's how it looks like now. Next slide. And these are the statues around the walls. Next slide, please. And this is the peace park that is next to it. I want to talk about this statue, but I don't think we have time anymore. Next slide, please. But actually, the bomb came from there. I'm praying for peace right now. The meaning of a statue. This is the shadow monument of Hiroshima. Next slide, please. In August 6, 1945, the bomb completely incinerates a person sitting on the staircase of Sumitomo Bank, and it left a shadow. The shadow became a shrine of sorts, victims of the atomic bomb. It was first cordoned off and then encased in glass, was later called Hitokabe no Ishi, and is now housed in the Hiroshima Peace Museum. And family members said that it is Mitsuno Ochi, because papers, fire insurance papers, were found near the area.
of this person. And it is now part of the complex of the Hiroshima Peace Memorial Park. So, just in case there's another atomic bomb, be sure to have your fire insurance papers with you so that you will be identified. Next slide, please. So, the strategy is conflict creates a unique artifact, the construction of a peace park, and the housing of the artifact in the museum. Next. We got a very, the picture of the shadow. It is fading, by the way. So in time, it will totally fade away. And her memory will also fade away. Next slide, please. Now we go to the 1,000-folded page of Sadako. It is so unfortunate that when we say Sadako in the Philippines, it is not Sadako Sasaki, but Sadako the Lumo, no, of the famous film. Let's go to the next slide. Sadako is a victim exposed to the radiation of the second, the first atomic bomb. She was diagnosed with leukemia, and what she did was, I will, in the belief that if she folds 1,000 frames, she will be cured and will be granted a wish. She continued to fold, she was able to do it, but eventually she died. And what happens is that the small paper frames that she folded are now in different museums of the world. This is also built heritage. It's handcrafted heritage, origami heritage, no? Which is now a wonderful and poignant symbol of the peace movement and anti-nuclear movement. Next slide, please. So this is the strategy. The constant experience process the creation of a peace artifact. Now, what can you create as a peace artifact, I ask you? The construction of a child's peace monument taps the whole experience. Next slide. This is our picture. Next slide. And take a look. This is the World Trade Center, Visitor Center, Memorial in New York. And that small frame in the box, that's the original frame. So this is now quite symbolic and quite eloquent in it. Probably that big, no? About 2 inches. To do so, to make it smaller would be difficult. Next slide, please. King Kapuji Pavilion. Next slide. It survives the only Mars, but a crazy person burns it in 1950. The whole Japan went into a depression, so they decided to restore it faithfully. Next slide, please. So this is the strategy. Next slide, please. This is how it looks like now. Beautiful. And whenever winter comes, I rush to Inkakuji because this is how it looks like in winter. Next slide, please. Even with me. Faithful reproduction, thank goodness there were drawings and plans that were preserved. Next slide, please. And this is how it looked like when it was barbecued. Not a pretty sight. Next slide, please. And of course, the last one is Shuri Castle. Next slide. This is the seat of the Ryukyu Kingdom, a kingdom which existed formerly in the south of Japan. And it was designated the national treasure in 1925, devastated in World War II. But from 1958 to 1990, it took a long-term reconstruction. I wonder if we can think in that way. 1952 to 1992, finally 1992, faithful reproduction based on plans, drawings, and some photographs. Next slide, please. So next slide. And we see here some recreation of rituals. Next slide, please. That's how it looked like after the war. And I will end with this last slide. And with this experience in Japan, we can see that we can have a typology. We can go painful restoration using original materials, new materials, or mixed materials. We have replacement with new edifices, and we have preservation of damage. Not many people are thinking of preservation of damage in Marawi right now. It actually takes a lot of money. No? It's not that easy because to preserve a structurally unsound structure is actually more difficult to do. But what is the effect? And I go back to memory. My paper is longer than this because I have a long memory. What happens when you faithfully restore cancer? Restore something. And I think Gerard mentioned this earlier, trauma is erased. It's as if nothing happened. It's a fictive solution. It's as if you don't want to remember that conflict actually happened. So it might not actually be always, might not actually be always the best solution. What about the second one, replacement? It's probably a better one, reflective. You have a new structure, you have a park. But they don't, the Japanese are so good because they always construct parks. In the Philippines, we don't construct parks. We construct malls, no? Huh? Doon pag meron nangyari, park. I wonder if they'll do the same thing in Marawi. You have some ruins and then a park. No? I don't know if today we can think of those of the problem in those terms. Not usually. And of course, the one is trauma embraced. By putting it there, you are saying that I am a changed person. This experience has changed me completely. I will forever suffer. I will forever suffer. And the ruins that I preserve will be a testament to my continuing suffering. Thank you very much.
Ito na ang programang kukumpleto sa Webes nyo.
Yun, yun!
Tampok ang mga boses, kwento at talento ng ating mga kawani, reps at mga guro ng bayan.
Yun, yun!
Tara na at pakinsa sa usapan para sa isang pamantasan at bansang masaya, masigla, malaya, makamamamayan at makabayan. Para sa isang tatakbo nyo na usapan, yun yun! Tuwing Huwebes, alauna hanggang alas dos ng hapon, dito lang sa DVD 1602, kasali ka!
Isang araw, di pa uwi na nga ako. Pagkabukas ko ng pinto, wala na akong ibang nakita. Hindi ang mga kamay niya na tumatama sa mukha ko. Wala na akong ibang naririnig, kundi ang iyak ng mga anak ko. Wala na akong ibang hinihiling, kundi matapos na ang lahat ng to.
Itigil ang pang-aabuso sa mga kababaihan. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Bayong! Ate, that's so 1950s!
Kesa naman gumamit ng plastic?
Bakit? It's more convenient kaya.
Pero mas environment-friendly ang bayong.
Tulungan nating bawasan ang kalat dulot ng plastic bag at papel. Magdala ng sariling eco bag. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka!
DZUP Special Features.
Ang susunod na tagapagsalita ay si Dr. Honey Libertine Achansar Labor. Siya ay kawaksing profesor sa UP Manila kung saan siya nagtuturo ng Humanities, Cultural Heritage at Art Management. Nagtapos siya ng BA Humanities, MA at PhD sa Philippine Studies sa UP Diliman. Gamit ang antropolohiya bilang angkla ng kanyang pananaliksik. Ilang ulit na siyang nanathala sa mga akademikong publikasyon at nagsalita na sa mga pambansa at internasyonal na kumperensya. Okay. Nakapokus ang kanyang pananaliksik sa medical anthropology, Southeast Asian art at Philippine pre-colonial art. So, para magsalita tungkol sa church bells in the Philippines amidst conflict, pakinggan po natin si Dr. Honey Libertine Achansar Labor.
Good morning, everyone. Right. So, Philippine Campana, or Church Bells in the Philippines, Iconography and Usage Amidst Conflict. In Pasyon and Revolution, popular movements in the Philippines, Ray Ileto demonstrated that an object strongly associated with the establishment may acquire its own meaning to the group it serves. It is the objective of this paper to show that the campana, or the Philippine church bell, is indeed one such object. So after three centuries under Spanish rule, and after all the efforts done in the Philippines to achieve sovereignty during and after this period in our history, the Philippines is still a predominantly Christian country. Ecclesiastical provinces and vicariates chart the archipelago from north to south. As historical records show, that the demolishment of built church structures, even those constructed during the period of Spanish colonization, was not part of the plan of the Filipino revolutionaries in their quest for independence. In fact, built church structures are sought after, as they have been used as temporary storm shelter or even as military garrison. So church bells, which are essential part of church structure, therefore proliferate in the Philippines. Most of these are only partly seen from the church belfry, while some flamboyantly displayed inside the church museum, that's in San Agustin, or at a churchyard. So the latter often due to belfries toppled down by an earthquake. So some, though, have been taken as spoils of war during the American occupation. It is certain, though, that Philippine church bells, which were often made out of bronze, outlived their original or earlier church structures, which are subjected initially to fire, and later, during the advent of stone churches, to the numerous earthquakes the country had been subjected to, as it is situated along the Pacific Ring of Fire, and thus frequented by strong earthquakes. The expression abajo de la campana has been carried to figuratively describe how the Philippines was ruled by Spain for three centuries under the church bells. So through these centuries, however, the Filipino have made the campana a part of their life, that it had gained a meaning beyond that of being an instrument of subjugation. In the 19th century, the campana has stalled not just church or religious events, but also secular occasions. It has become a time marker, a fire locator, and it has even cued the start of an uprising against colonizers. Oral and written narratives testify to its wide use as a warning device for Moro attacks. Moreover, a document written by the Katipuneros in 1895 in Bacaue, Bulacan, attests that the sound of the campana was used as a signal for the Katipuneros to defend themselves against the Spaniards, despising all sufferings and even death if God so decrees, unquote. Likewise, one of the Balangiga bells, now in an American military base in South Korea, was used to signal Filipino guerrillas to attack the Americans. Our demand to reacquire these Balangiga bells, which the American took as spoils of war, is in itself a testimony to our having claimed the campana as part of our national patrimony. Of course, more to that, in our next talk later. So to commemorate the first anniversary of the Typhoon Yolanda, church bells were rung simultaneously in the Philippines last November 8, 2014, at exactly 6 in the evening. It is in this context that the campana and its usage are said to have been indigenized or have been made our own. The succeeding discussion will address this time whether its form and production may in fact also be reflective of the Filipinos' growing sense of patriotism and desire for autonomy and independence. So for this, I shall be presenting in this paper the role of one task to make it. No? So that's the bellcaster or the fundidor, as well as the texts embossed by the fundidor on the bell, particularly the lengua franca or the language used. So before we proceed to that, it deserves mention though that the campana is also a visual artifact. No? In another study, I have discussed the iconography and the iconological meanings of some of the images found in the Philippine church bells. So some of these visual images indicate the religious order, which commissioned the casting of the bell, while some glorify the town's devotion to their patron saints. Pakita ko lang. Quick lang, kasi it is in another paper, but the crosses, pinaka common was the crossword crosses. And then, ito yung, ano, this is the Franciscan symbol. You would see two hands with a on top of a cross, no? One hand, yung dalawang kamay, obviously, iba yung may-ari, no? One with a cloak is obviously, I mean, one without the cloak is obviously the one of Christ, and the one with no cloak has to be that of Saint Francis. But yeah, we don't have time for that. Yeah, so better, closer shot. Ah, okay. So this is the La Asunción bell in Maasim, Leyte, Southern Leyte. And you see there the Our Lady of Assumption. So to whom the church has been dedicated. In Taal, Batangas, nasa ano na siya, nasira nung, nahulog nung, bumagsak nung earthquake. So, but this is Saint Martin of Tours, riding a horse. Ah, there. Close up. Ah, yeah. And then in Luan, Bohol. No? Only, well, in most write-ups, they would say that only one thing survived Luan. No? They say it's the image of Our Lady, no? Of the Immaculate, of Mary, no? Which really survived it. But there was one more structure which I would like to add to what has been said. No? Well, this is how it looks like right now in Bohol, but there you go. So that's the image of Our Lady and the church bell. No? That's Our Lady of Light, of the scepter. So as stated earlier, the campana is an archival document and therefore is a source of data for local history. The text on its body document the state, the date of its casting. In this bell, we see it there, no? So it was done in Año 1867. So the name of the parish priest of the church at the time of casting, its patrons and donors responsible for funding it. Okay. The system of measurement and the lengua franca used during the time of its casting, as well as the name of its bell caster, and even occasionally the address of the bell caster's foundry. So inscriptions of the church bells themselves reveal as well that contrary to common notion, most church bells in the Philippines were cast by local church bells, local bell casters, no? The fundidores. So these fundidores began inscribing their names on the campana in the 18th century, but did so more extensively from the 19th century onwards. So this coincided with the germination of the Filipino sense of identity in the latter part of the 18th century, which further heightened during the 19th century, when decrees which stressed the old colonies were equal and integral part of the Spanish monarchy. No? This was when it was promulgated. So in 1819, Henry Peddington, who observed that the Creoles were openly discussing then concepts of freedom, democracy, and the ideal of right to revolution, already noted the spread of individualism and nationalism. The inscriptions of the bell caster's name on the campana is a phenomenon which can be compared then to the proliferation of the artist's signature on works done during the period of humanism in Europe and onwards. This is a list of 19th century fundidores. So the dates that follow, or right beside it, indicate the years during which these figures were actively engaged in bell casting. So these were all done in the Philippines. No? So basis for the dating are the dates inscribed or embossed on the extant bells themselves. So in the second half of the 19th century, a fundidor named Hilario Sunico, his name is there, sa may bandang gitna, no? Okay. Had particular renown. No? So extant church bell shows that he was commissioned to cast bells for the Agustinians in Manila, Pampanga, Bulacan, for the Jesuits in Cavite, Ilocos, Samar, and Iloilo, and for the Franciscans in Laguna and Bicol. Hilario Sunico was born in 1855 in San Nicolas, Manila. A son of poor parents, he sought his fortune through initiative and hard work. In 1870, at a tender age of 15, he thought of putting up a foundry shop in Calle Jaboneros, number 19 and 20. No? We see a bell with his address there. No? So with literally no capital, this enterprising young man gathered what he could of scrap bronze and iron from the junk pile. And with crudely manufactured oven, started his career of melting scraps and turning them into bright, gleaming buttons and buckles to adorn leather harnesses and give horses a festive appearance. Before long, Suniko's tumble-down shack threatened to collapse under the pressure of so much demand. It is not certain when he exactly started to cast bells, but an extant bell in Pampanga shows that he cast one in 1872. In 1878, he garnered his major success as a bell caster with the bell he made for Binondo the Church. As the vibrant tone of the bell proclaimed to everyone, okay, the standard of Suniko's foundry. From then on, Suniko was commissioned by practically all the religious orders in the country. I skipped some parts. Aside from these religious commissions, however, Suniko is also responsible for grill works for the grill works at the Puento Colgante, no? Ayala Bridge, Quiapo. The first suspension bridge built in Southeast Asia, the Tutuban Railway Station, the Manila-Dagupan Railway, and then later, various departments of the American government. In 1891, with the money he had earned, a two-story house, Calle Jaboneros, number 4915, was constructed after the tumble-down shack had been torn down. By this time, the Suniko Foundry had been an institution and its bells had graced each and every one of the old churches in Manila, as well as the nearby provinces. We see this now in San Nicolas. No? This is formerly no, the foundry of the house and the foundry of Hilario Suniko. And then quick run through, the last part of my paper is simply to show that five different languages were used in bells, and they appear to have a movement towards, historical movement towards the eventual use of Filipino. Ito yung site ng pinakalumang kampana sa Pilipinas, no? Dated 1591. Here is the bell, and it's, meron ba akong spot? Yeah, all right. So it says here, Santa Maria de la Vinalota, Ora pro Nobis, no? Let's pray for us. But a better one, yeah, in another bell. So we see that phrase in the 1867 Capiz Panay bell. Josepus Belosos fecit ad laudem Sanctissimi Trinitatis Benedissimo Maria Consolationis uius opidi de Panay Patrona et Advocata Anno Domini 867. Kung alam niyo Latin on. So this was done by Father Jose Berloso. Ayan, it's there. So as most of the members of the religious orders who came to the Philippines spoke Spanish, its use eventually became most prevalent on church bell inscriptions in the 19th century. Ayan. So inscribed on the 1875 campana in Panay copies. Meron ba akong text nito? Ayan. So you can just read it. No? Soy la voz de Dios que liabare y ensalzare desde el principio hasta el fin de este pueblo de Panay para que los fieles de Jesucristo vengan a esta casa de Dios a recibir las gracias celestiales. So Church Bell in Pangil, Laguna Church, dedicated to Nuestra Señora de Osay Hijo. All right. So during the American period, the use of English is evident on a number of bells. However, as an offshoot, in the surge of 19th century nationalism, Tagalog was already being used even before the Filipinos were, quote-unquote, granted independence by the Americans. To cite a few bells, cite a few examples of bells with Tagalog text. Nandito ba? Okay. From Alitagtag, Batangas, dated 1921, sa Kapurihan ng Mahal na Poon, Santa Cruz. Okay. Sa Alitagtag, Batangas, at pitong sakit ng Mahal na Birhen. No? So, the Holy Cross of Alitagtag, Batangas, and the Seven Sorrows of Mary. Ah, yeah, okay. I have more here, but conclusion. Conclusion na ba to? Okay, sorry. So, conclusion. So, truly, we Filipinos have claimed the campana as part of our national patrimony. I have shown this in terms of the church bell's function in its iconography, as well as in its language form or its lingua franca. In a previous work, I have shown as well how the text embossed on the campana can be used to complete aspects of local history. For this paper, the mere discussion of the Campana's form and function, though, suffices in indicating the Filipinos' growing sense of patriotism and desire for autonomy and independence in the 19th century and thereafter. Thank you. Maraming salamat po.
Napahinggan natin ang mga talumpati ni Dr. Leonardo Estacio ng UP Manila College of Arts and Science at mga pag-aaral ni na Dr. Matthew Santamaria ng UP Asian Center at Dr. Honey Libertine Adjansar Labor ng UP Manila College of Arts and Science. Sa Edinaos, The Lost and the Retrieved, Built Cultural Heritage Amidst Conflict dito sa DZUP Special Features. Hinandog ito sa atin ng UP Manila Philippine Arts Program. Maraming salamat mga kasali. Like our Facebook page at DZUP 1602 AM and at DZUP Specials. Feel free to interact with us on Twitter and Instagram at DZUP 1602. You may also call us at 503-8288 or text us at 0927-220-8332. Abangan ang mga susunod na mga episode ng DZUP Special Features from Tuesday to Friday at 9 to 10 AM. Do you have events you want to be covered by UP Diliman's official radio station? Send your proposals to dzup.marketing@gmail.com. Sa ngalan po ng lahat ng bumubuo ng DZUP 1602, ako si Gian Leprojo. Magandang umaga.